Friends, spring training is in full swing for all the major league teams right now. And to give you an idea of the complexity of this annual baseball operation, we've invited one of the club managers to spend a few moments with us discussing the subject. It's certainly nice to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allen. I'm delighted to be here in Hepsweizen.
Are you?
Yes, because there's the various ways that we try to say to explain the, what you would like to find out about the new method of employ.
As I said before, spring training's in full swing right now, and all the major league clubs are... It is a complex...
No, it's not about... Only, for instance, depending upon where you would plan to go and have your training in various places. Like, some have taken Arizona, others have taken Florida, but they find that the base of the thing gives players a definite void where their training can be brought to a useful accumulation of all.
You did say it was nice.
Yes, I did, because there was no other reason why we would try, because this has been going on for years, as you very well know, being one of the sportscasters that have been given these baseball tries at the song.
No, I was the one who said it was nice to have you with us.
Yes, I said I'm glad to have you too here.
I'm sorry I said it. I don't know. But you are a club manager.
I am one of the managers of the new team because you've read that recently they've added several teams to the leagues, and we are taking it in to find out just what would cause so that the batting averages could be increased with more potency of a trade.
Do you think you'd have trouble finishing 11th?
No, I think you are trying to josh me with trade.
I do.
Yes, I
like to josh now and then.
Yeah, I know you're a josh man.
Well, Josh, some ball clubs do go to Arizona for spring training while others go to Florida. Getting serious now. Yeah. What is your preference and why?
Well, I would say this. There is really no preference depending upon the type of ball players who go to the season. Now, for many years, Florida has been a ground where most of the training had been done without training. Now, only recently, in the state of Arizona, they brought a new place, and the players have found it to such a way that it will be played, and next year they'll probably find another town, another state and crop it. Because it will be useful, to say.
Well, I asked a two-part question. Did you answer both parts?
Yes, I said that both Arizona... Sure. Yeah, I did. I said that Arizona and Florida will both be very trade, but there will be a new state, depending on how the weather will hit it without a goal game.
I accept what you say. I just wanted to make certain you had answered both parts.
Well, I've done my best to the ability that I'm able to contrast with or whatever you asked.
Yes. No. Well, would you explain how you solve the problem of rookies and nightlife? There I go with two questions again. I'm afraid of that.
Well, that's all right. I can answer it according to your way. You see, rookies and nightlife do not mix very well in trade because we must have the players in condition. Yeah. And nightlife, not that I am against nightlife, it's an industry as well, where people, do have to, a lot of the people working in the state, but as ball players who are in strict training, they must follow up the routine of trade and not permit themselves to overthrow where they would not be able to be in good condition on the day where the games have to be played, excluding doubleheaders. reasonable...
Well, I've just... You lost me somewhere in Arizona.
That was a previous question, which I answered to acknowledge that you understand.
Well, that's where I got lost.
Yes, well, we'll...
How do you make sure that these rookies are in bed at a reasonable hour?
We have a new type of a thing which is known as a clock watch phase with a corpsman and has a bell. Yes. Now, as they open the door, they may not know that we don't want it to feel that we are spying because that's far away from anybody. My way, you're going to go spy what I say. But we do have where they come in and as they open the door, a bell fits and it punches a certain time. And now the following morning when we know. And then we can confront them and say, why did you arrive at this hour? You know, that was the way. But we give them a break. We tell them all that's right.
You have bats, of course.
Bats, which they use on the field.
And apparently some of them are in your belfry.
Well, the belfry. I don't understand that question. Well, I thought you were talking about a bat with a ball.
We'll eliminate that.
Yeah, well.
One more thing.
Yes.
Everyone knows the... what I wanted to ask, though, before, how do you know, how do you determine what is a reasonable hour?
Reasonable hour is any time before midnight, in between the hours of 9, where the bed, they are ready to destroy, then we would say that at 10:30 p.m. the type would be short, and we give them the opportunity.
No one's ever...
No one has to be saved, no.
But nobody's ever...
Nobody has to be
saved. Never.
Never, no.
And nobody's ever
And
thought...
we haven't caught... Well,
that right?
As long as they come in, we have a trace and we feel them.
But nobody's ever thought that was unreasonable.
No, they, as a matter of fact, they are very glad of the idea and they stay out more reasonable than they have to be.
Because, you see, some...
No, not all. Only some, as you said.
Some.
Yes, some, as you said.
They are never completely satisfied and...
Well,
you get a complaint now and then.
There is a complaint now and then which we discard and throw into the same as a man who bats 220. Well,
yes.
There's no complaint there, but he plays his best at it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and that's the averages go up always.
But that's the fellow that thinks it's an unreasonable hour.
No, he's the one, but we permit him and we take him, and the next time he's in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm. One more thing.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the colorful but confusing language. You'll forgive me for this.
Yes.
There's nothing personal involved, but everyone knows the colorful but confusing language used by Casey Stengel.
Okay.
Now, there's nothing personal involved here.
No.
I'm told you're one of the few people who can understand him.
Well, of course. You see, the trouble with people is this.
Yeah.
Stengel talks very fluently and affably without any choice. What he wants to bring out is something that many people use in a language which they call their own. It doesn't always have to straighten. Now, he may say, that other fellow or my man or my guy was straight the shortstop, because if he used the center field bleachers, it wouldn't be straight. People know.
I
but
think
they,
that's good.
They know it, but they think he is giving them something which is not complex or variable without a thing. That is why it is said about him that his language is not.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same as we are, but they wouldn't. And therefore he is, but he will be whenever the ball game goes over.
That's one of his better...
Much better than when they have a new tour.
Did you... you never...
Yes, I've had many times. Oh, yes, I've listened.
Well, he's only been invited once to... Congress, to the, you know, the committee that
yes,
did the
well,
investigation.
I remember
you...
I was there with him at the time because they brought me in to solve the things that he was going to say to really interpret for him, because he was very perplexed and the remarks that he made, some of the congressmen said, well, but tell us about why this here clause should be eliminated with race.
Sure.
And he was a little bit, so he said to me, I told him, this clause was put in there for the fact that whatever in baseball is trade, there was no antitrust manner with fraud, and this is, they took it up in that manner. And took
well,
it without trade.
I thought that was well said. And
yes, I felt that way too, and so did Mr. Stengel.
And the members of the Senate Investigating Committee thought it was well said. In fact,
the congressional record will show that there was very thing, and it's all on the up there without any part of the.
They even quoted some of it.
They quoted some
of
it
remarks.
Because that's what they quote most times too on the various other subject, which is raised.
Although they didn't get reelected.
No, some of them came back.
I will say this. Friends, by now, you probably recognize the voice and style of that double talker and all double talkers, Al Kelly. Al, thanks a lot for coming by.
Thank you,
Al. We enjoyed it as usual. He breaks me up. I just can't, you know, but it was fun. Really, really a lot of fun. And Al, too, is a great baseball fan, actually. You know, Al... switching from baseball to football for a moment. Football takes some funny bounces, but you have to be ready for them. You also have to be ready for any planned changes in the rules of the game, especially if you are a sportscaster. And that's why we've invited...
Would you mind starting
again? Well, I'm sorry.
So I'd like to make a clean start. See, these are different takes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was continued. I beg your pardon.
There's the wrap-up, or if you want to just...
I'm sorry. I thought that was... See, I was trying to bridge it.
Bardo.
Yeah,
we'd rather take different.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I thought that was
good. You want to do a tag again, a wrap up, a thank you, and goodbye? And
yeah,
goodbye.
Yeah. No, and I thought that was getting fine. All right. Well, friends, by now you probably recognize the voice and style of that tremendous double talker, and all double talkers, a real big leaguer, Al Kelly.
Thank you, Bill.
Al, thanks ever so much for coming by, and honestly, you just break me up and just sitting here and talking with you, and I don't think I even gave you a chance to establish the fact you weren't Al Kelly in the beginning, but it's just so much fun, and we thoroughly enjoyed it, as we always will. Al Kelly.
Thank you.
There's no doubt about it. Friends of football takes funny bounces, and you have to be ready for them, whether you're playing the game or whether you're writing about it or happening to be broadcasting about it. And that's why we've invited a member of the Football Rules Committee to talk with us today briefly about any new rules or changes in the old ones. It's certainly a pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mellon. I'm delighted to be here with you.
To begin with, are you ready for the first question?
Yes, I certainly am.
We always like to start with that one.
Yeah.
Would you give us your opinion of last season's controversy over the game between Notre Dame and Syracuse?
I'm glad you asked that question. You probably have read in the papers that they have now reversed the decision of the state because they felt that when the whistle blew at the end of the game, which was close to the time of the limit allotted to the state, the ball, as it was sailing through the air, did not consume the time of the state, and therefore Syracuse was permitted to state, although Notre Dame may have said where both have been in disagreement. It has come out now, and Mr. Arthur Maycroft and Statham Foreman, who is one of the head men who is convention these rules, has definitely completed the fact that where the ball has bounced into trade without the draw, it must count on a new basis of forming. And that is why they have taken.
I think I see. I'm not...
Well, yes. I mean, this is the way they concluded the idea. Yeah.
And that's why
Notre Dame won. It stand the way it is today without any definite trade. And there'll be no reoccurrence of it because the game wouldn't go on until the following season.
I was just... wondering whether I ought to ask that question over again.
Well,
I
think I've given you the clear and concise point on it.
I think you did, too. I must have been distracted somewhere in there. I don't know. I got to thinking about the end of the game. Let me ask you, are 11 men on each side enough?
Definitely not.
As a member of the Rules Committee,
as a member of the Rules Committee, I am now bringing forth a new judgment because we believe that as long as there should be employment for more people, let there be 14 on each side. Mm-hmm. Because with 14, you have three additional men. Each one can cover a certain area of place in the event of a pass, which goes through the air that no one might be about to deflate. There is always a man who could find that ball and which will add more, not only to the jollity of the game, but to the fact that they can establish a new trade and to be kept into an area where the ball cannot escape.
You know, oddly enough, that makes sense.
Yes.
But I'm a little bit confused about Rule 22, Paragraph 6, Line 4. Would you clear that up for me?
That I will. Yes. I'm glad. Many people asked about this particular rule.
Oh, is that
and
so?
You see, because this
that wasn't original then.
No. Well, I don't mean that. I wouldn't try. I see that you are very well versed in your football by asking this particular question,
which has
come from some of the greatest coaches. You heard of Coach Bell, Maynard of the University of Norman, and then Coach Martin Fields. He's one of the great outside coaches. They've asked the same question. Now, when you
were the coaches in that Notre Dame Syracuse game you were talking about.
That is it. Yes, that's right. Yeah. You see, I see you follow your game very well.
Yes.
Now, when the ball is passed from the quarterback, he gets it from the center, and this is a reverse ball of the field because he's taking it back not only to his own trade. This rule, which says in paragraph 6 that the Rule 22 doesn't hand the trade, the man who receives it has his own point, and he's on the open field where he cannot be tackled. How are you going to trade? That is why we will change it. And I think they will.
Change what?
Change that rule from Rule 22 to make it sound as though that people should know what is going on the field. Do you know people who sit there many times don't know what is happening? But by this rule being changed to conform with the trade, then they will know that the pass receiver was tackled without falling down into the air as he was making the touch.
You know, you must have played football yourself.
Well, I don't want to really say, but I was a linebacker.
Well, I'm surprised. I thought you might have been a quarterback.
No, linebacker, because the quarterback, I didn't want to take these signals off of my mind.
Well, I wondered how the rest of them might have understood all the signals. But let me say this. It's about time to end our masquerade. Our so-called Football Rules Committee member, ladies and gentlemen, is none other than the famous king of the double talk artist, Al Kelly. It's been fun having you on the show, Al. It's been fun always. It's been fun knowing you. And this is one man that I can just say hello to and start laughing. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Mel.
Friends, this is the time of year when people enjoy going downhill fast. On skis, I mean. He's not that. And for those of you who ski or those of you who'd like to learn, we have with us today a gentleman who's a living legend among ski instructors the world over. He's the internationally famous Hans Schnapps of Austria. Hans, it's a pleasure to have you as a monitor guest.
I'm very happy to be as a guest, Mr. Allen, and I have more than space to reply.
Well, there's a boiling controversy underway these days. I don't know whether I should have used the word boiling when we're talking about winter sports, but in any case, the controversy is raging over the comparative merits of long skis versus short skis. Now, Mr. Schnapps, which is your preference and why?
Well, I would say that it would be much better if they came to a new thing with the middle ski, because the long ski doesn't let people go too far out as they are making the slalom ride to the snow, which is right, and the short ski moves them back to the throw without the distance, which is right. But if they have a middle ski, which will cause delay, then all can find themselves into the tray and be very fine skiers in the Cognis.
You, of course, have
skied. I don't ski at all.
Oh, I see.
No, I'm just an instructor.
I thought perhaps you did.
No, I skied when I was a small brother. I skied, and then I found out I'd better eat more than I did. Yeah.
But you watched them ski.
I watch everyone ski. They are fine, but the middle ski, that's my new thing to bring in.
Because
the long and the short both have no distance, so the middle one takes in between the two, and we have an average for everybody, tall or long.
I'm not laughing at you, understand?
No, I understand, of course.
Well, I'm just wondering if you had skied, because, even just watching it...
Yeah, skiing to watch is very, very fine. For people go all over to ski watch all
yes,
the time.
Ski watching is like bird watching in other countries.
You'll find it.
Well, when a fellow, have you ever?
I ever did, but I didn't ski. You don't let me tell you. Say that you ever. I don't know what you ever, but I do very ski all the time when I watch him.
Well, I thought when you watch him, somebody had an accident. You always could say, well, Schnapps picked him up.
That's right. I don't pick him up.
That should be the end of this. But what is the most common error of a skiing beginner, and how can they correct it? It's funny, you know, I always ask questions in two parts to each one.
The best way is not to fall while you're skiing. That's the best. Sir. Then if you go through the entire beginning, as you go from the top right and you make your jump, which leads you into that new area where you find, then you have completed a fine ski and there's no trouble, and people will see it and they'll find out too. Maybe they'll ski, because this is why the purpose is to get more people who ski without skiing before they went there together.
You know, your accent's changed since we started this interview.
Well, I get excited, so when I get excited, I become a very excited man, and I forget what I was saying in the first place.
Yes, well, how can you correct it? I don't mean the accent, I mean the errors in skiing.
Oh, the errors in skiing. Yes. By having skis that fit the feet is important. Because some people get skis that overlap and they don't have the underneath where the mouth, right? This is the part of the ski that holds onto the foot and causes it without the strap to be felt. But if some of them, if they tie up the ski well to the foot, they will come down together with it and there'll be no loss.
Snow is important, isn't it?
No, yes, in order to have, because otherwise... Yes. What do you mean snow is important?
Well, I just...
I don't understand the questions. Where would they ski if the snow didn't come up?
Well, how do you wax your skis?
With a new type of a thing called Maravik ski. It's made by a fine company in Australia, Coleman, Dees, Haim, and Company.
Is this a plug?
No, people don't know of them. Can't be a plug. No, nobody even heard of the name. So, but they make fine ski
that
wax.
That I can believe, yeah.
No, but they're the new. They made a new ski wax, which they put on the straight, and it causes for the finest type of skiing that you ever had in your life. If you ski, get Maravik Corblink Date Flynn.
And you'll find it
a very good boy.
I sure will. Yeah. If I ever ski.
Your skiing will improve.
Because I don't know where I may fall. And
no, with this wax, there's no falling. No, that prevents falling because the wax holds on to the foot.
Do you prefer the normal slalom or the giant slalom?
I don't care who goes. Anybody can go if they like to. Have to be Mr. Slalom. Yeah. I don't know who he is. If he's a good skier, let him go. I don't stop. I think everybody should ski if the weather is there.
And
without it, you can't go.
That's right.
Yes.
Do you believe in, speaking of weather, using artificial snow in order to continue with the ski meet?
No, artificial snow has not the same effect as the regular snow which comes to people who know what it is. Because artificial, suppose a certain spot is not covered and the sun melts through the strait, then the whole thing is over. See? And you haven't got the right phrase for your gift to people.
Then you have to go back.
Then you have to go back to the snow. You wax up the same from Kalman, Hayes, and Bloggenstein and Company. And there in Australia, you can't go so far. Unless you go by plane, you might make it.
Well, out. Friends, if you've been having trouble untangling Mr. Schnapp's sentences, you're not alone. You see, Mr. Schnapps ain't Mr. Schnapps at all. He's really Al Kelly, who probably has had some schnapps. He really hasn't, but, I mean, you know, it sounds that way when you talk. Al Kelly, king of the double talkers. Al, thanks for coming by, and remind me not to take your advice on skiing too seriously.
Thank you, Mel.